any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Problems, problems, problems all day long. Will my problems work out right or wrong? My baby don't like anything I do. My teacher seems to feel the same way too.
Good morning. You have tuned in to Problem Corner on KFAR 660 AM 97.5 FM. Your guest host this morning, again, is Mike Prox, filling in for He Who Cannot Be Identified. And my guest in the studio is Nick Nugent, and we're going to be talking about early aviation in Ketchikan.
Yes.
And this is guaranteed to be fascinating, so stay with us. All right, Mr. Nugent, take it from there.
Yeah, yes. Thank you, Mike. Mm-hmm. What I found out when I first started looking at Ketchikan aviation is how it affected aviation all over the state with some of the names that you read and you go, well, I remember him from Fairbanks, or I remember him from Juneau or flying. But a lot of people got their start in Ketchikan. It was the first stop, basically, on the way from Seattle north.
Right.
The earliest, though, commercial aviation in Alaska was here in Fairbanks when local merchants brought James and Lily Martin. They were a husband and wife team. They demonstrated their aircraft. That was in 1913. Lily was a licensed pilot in England. They shipped their aircraft from Seattle to Skagway, then carried it up, put it on a barge, on steamers down the Yukon and the Tanana to Fairbanks. So the plane had a remarkably long trip before it ever got in the air.
Yeah.
They arrived in July, and after assembling the plane, they flew over Fairbanks at an elevation of 200 feet for 11 minutes, and people couldn't quit talking about it, which gives us an idea of how far aviation has come over the years.
Yes.
Actually, the very first flight attempt in Alaska was 1911, just 8 years after the Wright brothers' first flight. A man named Henry Peterson built an airplane in Nome, and he based it on news magazine photos of the Wright brothers' plane.
Huh.
Henry was not an aviation designer, but he looked and did as much as he could. Unfortunately, his plane did not have the power to take off, even when it was drug over to Pillock Hill and shoved down the hill on the ice. He couldn't quite get the power to get in the air. There's not really a record of what happened to the final disposition, although probably the plane was taken apart for parts and whatever, you know, the motor out of it, if nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
But Henry was pretty good about it. He always told people from that point on, he was the first to try.
First to try. Somebody's got to try it first.
That's right. He was the first to try. The Martins were the first to fly.
Uh-huh.
Well, in 1920, aviation interest was renewed when the U.S. Army sent the Black Wolf Squadron from Long Island to Nome. That was an early demonstration flight.
Mm-hmm.
They flew war surplus DH-4B bombers, 400 horsepower Liberty engines. They took off from Long Island, made it all the way to Nome. Each aircraft had a pilot and a mechanic. There were four. They crossed from Prince George to Wrangell and then on to Juneau before turning inland to Whitehorse, Dawson. And at Juneau, they dropped mail consisting of West Coast newspapers, and it was the first delivery of news by aircraft in Alaska, which kind of pointed the way ahead toward what would eventually become a robust airmail operation.
Mm-hmm.
The only real flight link to Ketchikan on that flight was they flew over. One of the aircraft flew over, got diverted by bad weather, and it just created a lot of excitement for aviation.
Mm-hmm.
But Ketchikan, they didn't land in Juneau either.
Right.
They had to get all the way to Skagway to land.
Yeah. And that was, when was that?
That was 1920, the summer of 1920, basically.
Yeah. There's pictures of that squadron. I wasn't thinking. 400 horsepower engines.
Yeah.
That's a lot of power.
It was in that day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which was part of the problem with that engine. It had so much horsepower, the metallurgy of the day, there were a lot of breakdowns. The
mm-hmm.
engines just pulled themselves to pieces, especially when they tried to use that engine here in the interior in the winter. The
mm-hmm.
fluctuation from extreme cold to running temperatures, even with warming them up,
yep.
was awfully hard on the engine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Southeastern Alaska then had another flyer who was attempting records rather than starting an aviation business. He kind of fits in here. Clarence Prest was a former circus motorcycle stuntsman who converted to flying
mm-hmm.
and barnstorming as a living. And he set an aviation altitude record at Seal Beach in 1917, which is interesting for a man that had a minimal aviation background, but he was daring,
mm-hmm.
so he kept pushing. In 1921, he set out to fly from Mexico to Alaska. The effort ended with a crash during a storm in Prince Rupert, and the following year, he decided to fly from Buffalo, New York, to Siberia by way of Alaska. He left Buffalo on May 10th, 1922, made Seattle by June 23rd. Again, he flew over a lot of the small towns in southeastern Alaska. Prince Rupert was an easier place to land. So
right.
if the weather were good, you hopped over the mountains, did everything there, and then came back.
Right.
So he made it to, he hoped to make it to Fairbanks by July 4th, except Canadian officials blocked his transit. They deemed the prior flight to have been an unauthorized commercial activity.
Ah.
So he was finally able to leave by shipping his plane to Juneau. He flew on to Skagway. He was pretty little concerned about Canadian officials this far north, realizing that communications was poor. So from Skagway, he jumped back over to Whitehorse, then Dawson, and eventually made it to Fairbanks. He didn't make it to Fairbanks. He left Eagle for Fairbanks,
mm-hmm.
and his luck went bad. His engine started sputtering, and he made an emergency landing up in the 70-mile country. He adjusted the engine, had it running, idling to take off. He got out of the plane to take a picture of a herd of about 500 caribou that was coming through, and a gust of wind flipped the aircraft over, broke the propeller, and damaged the upper wing, and he had to walk back to meet a rescue party which was coming out from Eagle.
Yes.
So it was kind of an inglorious end. He did, though, eventually arrive in Fairbanks on August 11th of 1921, and that was the end of his activity. He returned back to the States.
Oh.
Well, Northbird Aviation then, 1922 to 1923, is the first real company to open and be based for commercial aviation in Ketchikan. Roy Franklin Jones was flying a Curtiss MF Seagull. A lot of the early planes were amphibians mm-hmm. or flying boats, simply because it wasn't easy to find a place sometimes to put a convenient airport in a lot of Southeast.
It was, right.
You know, look at now how far the airport is out of Juneau, even.
Right.
Yeah. So it was a modified World War I Navy aircraft. They named it the Northbird. He was accompanied by his mechanic, Jerry Smith. He completed the first flight to the territory via the Pacific Coastal Route, and he established Alaska's inaugural charter flying service. Wasn't scheduled airline, but they chartered where people needed to go, mm-hmm. and he was based in Ketchikan.
Hmm.
He did pretty well with running miners around and different things. He was, unfortunately, running mostly out of pocket from the start without the benefit of any real subsidies or financial support.
Mm-hmm.
He also operated what was the time, this aircraft was pretty underpowered. Mm-hmm. So there were just some things that it wasn't able to do. It also had the era's rather typically unreliable liquid-cooled engines. And liquid-cooled mm-hmm. engines just had a lot of problems in those days.
Yep.
When they came up with the air-cooled radials, right, then aviation started to change big time.
Yeah.
Where he was, there was a total lack of existing aviation support, seaplane docks, radio communications. None of that existed. And that in addition to the local weather and terrain. And, you know, we read about Noel Wien and a lot of, and Crossan and the Flyers here. Mm-hmm. But think about the weather in Southeast.
In Southeast, yes.
And here we can go out and look around, see a number of ridge tops you can land on. That certainly was not true in Southeast. If you had a problem, you had a serious problem,
yep.
which is why the flying boats or aircraft on floats were so popular.
Yep.
The ocean was the option.
Yep.
With all of that, he managed to log over 400 flight hours during his sole year. He set numerous Alaskan aviation firsts, and there were many hours, though, of downtime spent maintaining and repairing damages on the plane, mostly caused by landing in rough, hard-to-land-in areas. Landing on the ocean mm-hmm. with much wave action was very hard on the early aircraft. You started to loosen the frames up,
right.
and they were constantly undergoing repairs just to stay watertight.
Yep, I can imagine that.
Well, his list of territorial flying firsts is significant. He was the first commercial air transport charter business with ticket offices and booking agents. The first regional and international flights connecting Ketchikan with Wrangell, Petersburg, Juneau, Haines, Skagway, and Prince Rupert. He also had the first international and inter-Alaska airmail, although it was unofficial. He carried mail as freight, not as mail.
Yeah.
He was the first flights for fish spotting, government fisheries patrol, aerial surveys for timber harvesting, hydropower, mining, and trapping assessment. In those days, you couldn't just go say, I'm going to go haul passengers from this town to maybe these two or three towns, and that's going to make me a great living. Because you, a lot of times, if you wanted to go from Ketchikan to Juneau, you couldn't get there because of the weather.
Yep.
So he'd find other flights that he could do to fit in.
Hmm.
A lot of people who ran early subsistence airlines, it was almost a subsistence lifestyle. They got enough money to eat,
right.
and they got enough money to, the rest of it pretty much went into keeping the airplane going.
Right, yeah.
Did some early newsreel photography for President Harding's visit to Metlakatla in 1923. He did the first emergency air medical transport, and he really got a lot of people throughout Southeast introduced to the airplane, and other entrepreneurs would follow along and realize, well, Juneau's building up. Well, Skagway, Cordova, mm-hmm. a lot of these coastal areas, they realized we could do a lot if we were based there.
Right.
We can't necessarily run a schedule through all these places.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then the next aircraft, Jones purchased a new airplane but had a number of minor setbacks and stopped what he was doing. So the next aircraft company was Roy J. Davis Airplane Company in 1925. And Davis was the son of New England Fish Company plant manager Arthur A. Davis. Davis shared Jones's dream and was actually inspired by a lot of what Jones did in his pioneering efforts. Davis was a pioneer airman, mechanic, and his career started in 1909. He was famous American aviator Lincoln Beachy's mechanic. Beachy set a lot of records, did a lot down in the lower 48 mm-hmm. with promoting early aircraft. Davis was a mechanic for him in 1911, and he served with the Lafayette Escadrille in World War I.
Huh.
So these guys, mostly we will find out that many well over half, learned to fly during the First World War.
Let's take a break. We're a little bit late, in fact, but we have to take a break and hear some words from our sponsors. You're listening to Problem Corner on KFAR, and with me this morning is Nick Nugent, and we're talking about early aviation history, particularly in Ketchikan. So stay with us. We will be right back.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
The Fairbanks Drama Association presents a fresh new comedy with a strong cultural bite, Yoga Play. The headquarters of a successful athleisure wear company provides a setting for an uproarious exploration of cultural appropriation, exploitation, consumerism, fat shaming, and yoga pants. Show runs September 5th through the 21st, Friday and Saturdays at 7:30, Sundays at 2 p.m. Tickets are available by calling 907-456-PLAY or online at aktickets.com. Brought to you by Timber Creek Senior Living and this radio station. Due to strong language, this show is recommended for adults.
This is Mayor David Pruse. We've had an incredible 3 years together. I'm running for re-election as your city mayor. I've led our fantastic city in expanding our ambulance service, increasing the police presence, removing derelict and dilapidated structures, cleaning up blighted properties, and increasing our street maintenance and snow plowing services. The city of Fairbanks is the best run municipal government in the interior, if not the state of Alaska. I want to continue this for our wonderful city, so please vote for me, David Pruse, the Fairbanksan, on Tuesday, October 7th.
Paid for by David Pruse for mayor. 324 Brandt Street, Fairbanks, Alaska, 99701.
When you're tired of waiting in box line stores, experience the customer service of Denali Industrial Supply. For nearly 40 years, Denali has been helping Alaskans build Alaska. Their knowledgeable staff has the experience, knows the products, and can get you what you need. Through the end of September, come in and find the hottest deals on Milwaukee power tools. Don't wait. These red-hot Milwaukee prices are only this month, only while supplies last, and only at Denali Industrial Supply. Denali Industrial Supply, 1499 Van Horn Road. Look for the big red roof.
KFAR weather.
Chance for scattered rain showers this afternoon. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. Daytime highs approaching 62. Winds out of the southeast, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected again tonight. Chance for scattered rain showers. Lows level off around 46. Chance for scattered rain showers tomorrow. 51, cloudy skies. And that's your weather on KFAR, 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
And welcome back. Thank you for staying with us. This is KFAR's Problem Corner, 660 AM, 97.5 FM. And your guest host this morning is Mike Prox, filling in for He Who Cannot Be Named. And with me is Nick Nugent, and we are talking about early aviation in Ketchikan. And I'm learning all kinds of things I knew nothing about. So this is a great opportunity. Mr. Nugent.
Well, Davis, probably's greatest contribution to Alaska aviation wasn't so much what he did himself. He had a small operation, was trying it. It fit into the pattern. But the greatest thing he possibly did was he brought Russell Merrill up.
Mm-hmm. So, we heard of that name.
Yeah, certainly Merrill Field in yeah. Anchorage. And we did a program on Russell about 3 months ago, I think it was. Hmm. And pretty fascinating story himself. You know, Russell was eventually lost. It was they think he was blown out to sea when he had to make an emergency inlet landing in Cook Inlet. Hmm. But Russell got started then with Davis, and they had the idea they would go to Wrangell and start a seaplane business there. But after getting there, they found out they were having trouble with permits from the Canadians getting back and forth out of Canada. So they came up to Ketchikan and started the business there and did pretty well with it. They had a number of lucrative charters, and they got here in May, and by June, they were actually making plans for expanding. Hmm. So within a month, they were on the grow. Over the next several weeks, literally working from the Coast Guard dock, or initially working from the Coast Guard dock, Merrill flew this F-boat, which was their aircraft, from dawn to dusk, logging revenue flights. Business eventually slowed down, and a decision was made to barnstorm up the inside passage to try to see, well, where else might support us?
Drum up some business.
Yeah. Yep. Merrill flew north on July 18th, accompanied by his wife. And Davis noted they wanted to operate year-round from Ketchikan. He liked Ketchikan. He was happy to be there. But unless business greatly improved, they'd likely have to seek new prospects elsewhere. So they left Juneau on August 1st, where they had stopped. They were destined for their new base of operations at Seward. And this flight became the first westward flight out of Juneau and the first crossing of Prince William Sound. Yeah. So that was a pretty remarkable flight that was all dead reckoning over the ocean where you can't look down and go, oh, yeah, that's the Tananaw River. I'll follow it for a while.
Yes, and no place to land even if you could get to the coast.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Well, they eventually got driven back by weather a couple of times, and it took 3 days to get there. They ended up making two stopovers for fuel, one at Yakutat and one at Katala. Merrill made numerous flights around Seward, which we'd talked about earlier, and Anchorage, Kenai. Well, their good fortune came to an end after a trip from Seldovia to Kodiak with a salesman, Gus Gellis, on board. While heading back to Seward, they encountered very stormy weather, which forced an offshore landing at Chugach Island, and they went to secure the plane on the beach, but it was wrecked as the storm got worse. The surf became so bad, it just beat the plane apart on the beach. Well, they were able to salvage the remains, sent them to Anchorage for storage. Merrill returned to Portland, and he and Davis looked at what they might do in the future. Next big company to come in was the Alaska Oregon Washington Airplane Company, 1926. And again, Davis and Merrill, they were set on Alaska. They realized it was going to be hard to break in, hard to get a start, but they knew there was a market here.
Right.
They were convinced of it.
Yeah.
They were looking for another war surplus flying boat, and they found one, Curtis Oriole, which was a more modern plane, for a decent price. So they didn't buy a surplus boat. And while they were doing test flights, they were in Portland taking off on the Willamette River, and they hit a submerged log, which was a pretty normal hazard back in those days of heavy logging. There was a lot of submerged material, and it very badly damaged the plane. In fact, damaged it beyond economic repair. Well, they managed to find and buy another craft. They purchased a crated, never-flown Aeromarine 40B flying boat. They planned to again base in Seward. Logistical contracts were negotiated and secured with several Bristol Bay canneries. They made their initial departure on June 27th, 1926. Well, it took over a week due to weather to get there. Very bad headwinds, mechanical breakdowns. The weather turned sour after they actually arrived, and a decision was made to lay over for several days to try to tune up the Aeromarine's rather finicky motor and install one of their backup power plants.
Yep, and I hear, actually, this is Pink Floyd coming through in the background. That means a satellite's coming overhead, and it's going to take over the show in just about half a minute or so, so we're going to have to take a break and pick this up on the other end of the news. I want to remind you again, you're listening to Problem Corner on KFR, and with me in the studio is Nick Nugent, and we're talking about the early aviation in Ketchikan. So stay with us. We'll be back after news and some words from our sponsors.
Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM 660 AM.
Fox News, I'm John Saucier. The Daily Mail got their hands on a jailhouse recording of a man accused of killing a Ukrainian refugee on a train in Charlotte, North Carolina. He's speaking with his sister. He blames a material in his body for this stabbing.
And so she just got stabbed.
Yeah. You know, that's not me. I'm talking about just for no reason. But since they did that, now they got to investigate the material in my body. So since they want to do all that, now they got to investigate.
Carlos Brown Jr. facing state and federal charges after a history of arrests and mental health issues. We've heard his mother previously tried to have him involuntarily committed. Multiple Russian drones crossing into Polish airspace. European officials called it a deliberate provocation. It caused NATO to send in fighter jets to shoot them down. A NATO spokesperson says first time the alliance confronted a potential threat in its airspace. America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
The Fairbanks Daily News Minor reports the Alaska Department of Transportation placed weight restrictions on two bridges last week as a precautionary measure. According to DOT, the restrictions will allow only one long combination vehicle at a time to cross the Rex Bridge on the Parks Highway south of Nenana and the Big Delta Bridge on the Richardson Highway. The Rex Bridge is officially known as the Jack Coghill Bridge to the interior. Angelica Stabs, DOT Northern Region's Public Information Officer, said the restrictions are due to the bridge's age and design. The 510-foot-long Rex Bridge was built in 1963, and the 784-foot-long Big Delta Bridge was constructed in 1966. Unlike modern Alaska bridge spans, the Rex and Big Delta bridges have overhead steel trusses designed to distribute vehicle weight. Basically, due to the long spans on some of the trusses, they see more accumulation of heavy loads than other bridges, Stabs said. More than one long combination vehicle could put too much stress on long concrete slabs supported by the trusses.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Hardworking Alaskans need hardworking printing solutions, and that's exactly what you'll find at Advance Printing. Since 1980, we've proudly supported Alaska's industrial companies with custom trucking forms, driver's logs, business invoices, and more. Specializing in bulk printing and mailing services, we understand the unique demands of Alaskan industries. With fast turnaround and a commitment to excellence, Advance Printing is your local partner for reliability and precision. Visit hotprinter.com or call us at 907-451-1111.
Advance Printing, where your business means a mint to us.
GCR Tires and Service introduces the Cooper Discoverer Stronghold AT All-Terrain All-Season Tire. Lock in control with aggressive tread design that anticipates Alaska's ever-changing roads. Cooper Discoverer Stronghold AT, superior performance on and off the road. On rocks, loose gravel, severe snow, ice, and mud, yet Stronghold AT is quietly responsive on the road as well. Now it's your turn. Buy your Cooper Discoverer Stronghold AT tires at GCR Tires and Service, the Tire Guys. Taming the Alaskan Road, Van Horn at Cushman. The Alaska Dog Mushers Association extends a sincere thanks to Lotto Alaska. This week's nonprofit proceeds will be supporting the Alaska Dog Mushers Association. ADMA appreciates all the support that Lotto Alaska has given and is grateful for this ongoing relationship. These funds will go towards racing, trail maintenance, purse prizes, and more, all in support and appreciation of Alaska's state sport. Any Lotto tickets you purchase this week will help support ADMA's organization and races. Play in person or online at lottoalaska.com.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
And we're back. Thank you for staying with us. You're listening to Problem Corner, 660 AM, 97.5 FM. Your guest host this morning is Mike Prox. With me in the studio is Nick Nugent. And we're talking about early aviation in Ketchikan and learning some fascinating things. So, Mr. Nugent, carry on.
Well, this Aeromarine aircraft was a finicky thing. And if it had flown as well as it looked, I mean, it's just a beautiful airplane, mm-hmm. they'd probably still be flying them today happily. The cannery contracts, by the time they got everything going and dried up like we were talking about during the break, supporting canneries is a very short window.
Mm-hmm.
It runs like anything when the salmon are running. When they're not, it closes right down. Mm-hmm. And that's what hit Merrill and Davis. They found out there wasn't really enough other business right at this time to keep a commercial operation going. And Merrill sailed south and returned to Portland in November of 1926. He, while he was there, received a number of offers. He was pretty well known. Various companies in the States and Alaska. He really liked Alaska. So in 1927, he signed on as chief pilot for Anchorage Air Transport. Merrill Pass.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of know the story of all of the efforts and the discoveries, the firsts that he put into South Central Alaska.
Yep.
He unfortunately went missing on a flight on September 16th, 1929. Roy Davis stayed in Portland, flew out of the Beaverton Airport, and he ran an airport repair shop and flight school. It's not listed whatever actually became of the Aeromarine 40, which was stored in Ketchikan.
Hmm.
Well, Southeast Alaska, then the next company was just simply Alaska. Washington Airways, 1929-1932. It really blossomed in 1929 in Southeast Alaska. That seemed to be a good year for startups and a good year for flying. On the heels of International Airways, Boeing Flying Boat Charter Survey flights to Ketchikan and Juneau came the historic arrival of Joe Carman Jr., Seattle-based Washington Alaska Airways modern Lockheed Vega 5C float planes.
Hmm.
And if anybody wonders if they've ever heard the name Lockheed Vega,
mm-hmm.
they only have to think of Wiley Post and
right.
realize what a remarkable step forward the Vega was compared to most of what else was available.
Yes. Yeah. But that was land plane.
It was. They did put them on floats.
Okay.
Ito, the which is still a big name in float makers, worked very closely with a lot of the early aircraft manufacturers to develop floats for the planes.
Yes. Oh, yes. And now that I think about the pictures, that Wiley Post plane was on floats, I believe,
yes.
when they crashed. Yeah.
So on April 15th of 1929, they made the first nonstop flight from Seattle to Juneau, inaugurating their air charter operations in the Panhandle, a lot of which was flowing out of Ketchikan.
Mm-hmm.
And they had same-day edition copies of Seattle's newspapers, which again showed the possibility of what
yes.
airmail could do.
Yeah.
That was the first time same-day newspapers had ever arrived
right.
in
yeah.
Alaska.
Yeah. And that would have been a big deal.
It absolutely yep. was.
Yep.
Yeah, the news was very newspapers were very popular in those days.
Yep.
People had their favorite paper, sort of like we have our favorite sport team now.
Right. yeah.
Well, they were a very professional airline. Their pilots wore full Navy style dress uniforms. They had a flight mechanic on board. The planes were uniformly painted in a dark blue and cream scheme. Their charter rate was $44 an hour for moving passengers or freight. They didn't charge by the pound, simply by the hour.
By the hour.
Twice weekly flights to Seattle were offered. They used two of their Vegas, the Juneau and the Ketchikan, and they carried more than 1,500 passengers during 5 months from the middle of April till the end of September 1929.
Mm-hmm.
Which, compared to our population, that's a pretty good number of
yes,
people they had in the air.
Yep, lots of flights.
They augmented their fleet to six different Vegas for the 1930 season, each one named after a panhandle city. The Juneau, Taku, Skagway, Wrangell, Ketchikan, Sitka, and Petersburg. They also built a seaplane maintenance floating hangars that summer in Ketchikan and Juneau.
Mm-hmm.
So those have been there quite a while. One-way ticket fare from Seattle to Ketchikan was $75, $135 round trip for a 4-hour, 30-minute flight. In July of that year, RKO Film Studios chartered the Skagway for location shooting on their Rex Beach film production, The Silver Horde, which was filmed in Ketchikan and areas around. So a lot of flying was done out of Ketchikan in support of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
They had their first serious accident on October 28th of 1930. The Skagway went missing with three on board while flying from Seattle to Ketchikan. The Taku had been written off previously on October 4th when a fire started and destroyed the aircraft. And there were three Vegas then were able to return for the 31 season. So they were still flying, but at a mm-hmm. reduced number of aircraft. Yeah. Fishing cannery baron Nick Betts purchased the airline outright and the Juneau hangar. And he used that to form Alaska Southern Airways with Ansgar Ekman as vice president. They held a receipt, the Alaska Washington had a receiver sale of what was left. Next company was Gorst. Gorst Air Transportation, the Alaska operations, lasted 1929 to 1935. What you see with each of these airlines as they come in, they last a bit longer.
Right.
Aircraft are getting better.
Getting better, they're, more reliable.
They're yep. learning from their predecessors' mistakes.
Yep.
There are now airports. Certainly radio by this time
mm-hmm.
was on. The ability to last longer was greater.
Yep.
And so they were founded by Gorst. He was considered to be the grandfather of United Airlines. He started seasonal operations in Alaska in spring of 1929. He founded Pacific Air Transport in 1926, which had the first airmail service between Los Angeles and Seattle. Pacific Air's 1928, they were sold to Boeing Air Transport. He funded then Gorst Air Transport of Seattle, bought a nine-place Loewing. C2C air yacht amphibian. Hmm. I love the names of the old airplanes.
Right.
You know, they kind of have it's air, but they want to throw in yacht to
yep.
have the idea of something luxurious and comfortable to yeah. the average listener.
Yes. And they were, except for the noise.
I think that's very true. Yeah,
yeah,
when you look at some of them, the woodwork
is
was quite incredible.
Yes, yes.
Well, they flew up. And on April 17th, they took off and landed, took off from Juneau, landed in Ketchikan. Or I'm sorry, they took off from Seattle and landed in Ketchikan, which was a nonstop flight from Seattle. The flight was crewed by Clayton Scott and Gorst, and a flight mechanic, Gordon Graham, said that one of the most enthusiastic crowds they could remember were standing out waiting for them to get there.
Hmm.
The way they announced the flights in most towns in those days, when a flight was coming in, somebody would set off the fire siren.
Oh, sure.
And everybody
yeah.
would
Make
know.
An event. Yep.
If they didn't see smoke, they'd run down to the docks. Well, after Ketchikan, they headed to Juneau via Petersburg. They had a profitable week of flying, and before returning to Seattle on April 24th, they did quite well and made pretty much permanent plans to be back. May 7th of 29, they flew Juneau to Cordova in 4 hours and 20 minutes, becoming the first commercial plane to fly nonstop across the Gulf of Alaska while carrying paying passengers, and the first to deliver airmail there from the south. And the airmail they had was a letter of goodwill from Ketchikan's mayor, J.J. Busey, to Cordova mayor, W.H. Chase, Dr. Huh. Chase, if mm-hmm. you remember him. On June 3rd, after a month's work out of Cordova that included trips to Anchorage and Kenai, they returned to Ketchikan, flew back to Seattle the next day.
Hmm. Yeah, good. Well, we're coming up on a quarter to the hour. That means we should take a break and hear some words from our sponsors that make this show possible. And want to remind you, you're listening to Problem Corner on KFAR 660 AM, 97.5 FM, and we're talking about early aviation in Ketchikan. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Whether running a marathon or to the store, we all get aches and pains. Migraines, sports injuries, spasticity can really put a hitch in your getup. Osteopathic manual medicine can help. Treating children to grandparents, Drs. Malcolm and Wright and McKinley Sports Medicine have over 27 years combined experience. Dr. Malcolm is Fairbanks' only board-certified sports medicine physician. Dr. Wright is double board-certified. OMM, FDM, Botox injections, and joint restorative treatments are exclusively available at one location, McKinley.
Smile. It says it all. So take care of that smile without breaking the bank at Affordable Dental Care. It's dental care for the entire family. New patient exams, including full mouth x-rays for cash price patients, starting at just $79. Crowns as low as $900 and implants for less than $3,000. They're also an in-network provider for a long list of dental plans. They also offer payment plans and accept care credit. Downtown on 14th Avenue. Call 374-3888 or online at affordabledentalcare.com.
TC, Rick, and I were on a mission. Find the best lunch on the island. The suspect? Giraldo's. The evidence? Pretty damning. All-you-can-eat Italian pasta buffet? Red sauce everywhere. An Italian sub sandwich? Stacked like it's smuggling flavor. Brick oven pizza? Hot, fresh, and guilty of being amazing. A plate of classic pasta? Criminally good. And the clincher? Homemade pepperoni stromboli with a fresh Caesar salad that even Higgins would enjoy. Case closed. Giraldo's for lunch.
Weather brought to you by Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing, offering 24-hour service from Salcha to Nanana and no mileage charge on callouts. The Bigfoot with the helping hand. Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing.
KFAR Weather.
Chance for scattered rain showers today. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. High temperatures reach up to 62. Easterly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies tonight. Chance for scattered showers 46. Chance for scattered showers tomorrow, high of 51. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio 97.5 FM, 660 AM,
and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
And we are back. Thank you for staying with us. You're listening to Problem Corner on KFAR. Your guest host this morning is Mike Prox, filling in for He Who Cannot Be Mentioned. And with me in the studio is Nick Nugent. We're talking about early aviation in Ketchikan, and this has just been a fascinating show, so please continue on.
Well, Mike, it is. And I think we could probably do an entire program of stories of people getting lost in storms.
Yes.
And that, although interesting, I think the successes are equally important. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the chances they took, yes, that's a big piece of the story. That was aviation in general. But to push through in what, to me, are worse conditions than Alaska's interior for aviation.
Oh, by a long shot.
Yeah, it was some remarkable effort.
Yep.
Well, in 1930, one of Gorst's planes flew from Ketchikan to Cordova for a 4th of July activity, and they were the first to land at Eyak Lake. They were able to pick up a lot of charters out of Cordova. There was a market. A lot of people were willing to be hauled up into areas where they were doing mineral exploration, all the way up into the Wrangell-St. Elias. So there was a market there, and they were able to operate an aircraft out of there, which helped quite a bit. When things started to look very good, they had an engine failure on the way back to Ketchikan, and they force-landed at Icy Bay. And the Nugget was destroyed again, another aircraft destroyed by surf. It was just pounded apart on the beach. And that was a very big setback. It took 3 days before they were rescued. It really set Gorst back pretty bad, but he was not a guy who was a small thinker. And he realized in 1930-31, he founded Pioneer Airways and realized that you couldn't make it work with one aircraft. You had to have several for backup, for keeping things. If one was down for some reason and stuck in weather, you needed another aircraft to go out and generate income.
Right.
It just had to have some size and some backing. So that's what he did. He hired Roy Jones, who we remember from earlier, first commercial aviator there. So they had they founded Pioneer Airways in Ketchikan on June 18th, 1930. Jones was eager to get back into the aviation game. He had learned a lot from being up before, and his familiarity with flying in the territory was definitely going to be an asset. The company purchased two factory new Stinsons, Stinson Jr., mounted on floats. One was dubbed the Sea Pigeon, the other the Northbird 2 in honor of Jones's first airplane. Booking offices were established in Ketchikan and Juneau, and being local, Pioneer Airways had advantages, especially regarding the use of the newly constructed Ketchikan Municipal Hydroplane Landing Port Facility. How would you like to write that out on your flight plan? So that was located at North Tongass Highway and Shoreline Drive. The plans were drawn up to build an add-on to the seaplane hangar building on the deck ramp and maintain their aircraft there. The plane pigeon arrived in the Sea Pigeon arrived in Ketchikan on June 21st, went right to work. The aircraft were in an orange, gloss orange and black paint scheme, which would have stood out nicely with kind of the foggy weather.
Either, the fog, the water, or the snow.
Yeah, yes. You look at it, you're going to know whose company that plane belonged to right away. Well, Dodson flew north and was resuming Ketchikan's service. Their new hangar was working out very well for them. It was, even though it wasn't quite complete, they were able to use parts of it, keep things out of the weather, which was good. Dodson flew numerous charter flights of every type around Ketchikan and as far out as Juneau and Sitka. On the 21st, the Sea Pigeon, which had been damaged, was returned, so they had both their aircraft. The air-sea environment in the Panhandle and in Southeast at this time was really humming along quite well. A vintage photo of Ketchikan, float port, on August 22nd of 1930 shows four different aircraft from three different companies based in Southeast were on waiting to go. Well, that September, Pioneer's fortunes went into kind of a downward spiral. On the 19th, the Northbird sank in a storm. Wind-driven waves flooded the floats, and it went down. On September 24th, just 5 days later, the Sea Pigeon was swamped, making an emergency landing in Juneau and required repairs. Their Ketchikan hangar, though, was finally finished, and they were planning on starting back up in 1931. Unfortunately, in May 3rd, the Sea Pigeon crashed, taking off from Salmon Lake, which is also known as Upper Carta Lake, on Prince of Wales Island, with three passengers on board on a cannery business charter with the loss of one soul. That was the Alaska Aviation's first ticketed passenger fatality at that time. And it seemed like it kind of put the airline off balance for a bit. Well, Ketchikan Airways came by in 1931, lasted to 34. They bought everything from Pioneer Airways. Apparently, that many accidents in a row, the owner was just ready to do something different that was a little less risky. Well, they couldn't seem to shake off the misfortunes that had dogged Pioneer. The Northbird 2 was heavily damaged. It was occupying rented space in Alaska Southern's floating hangar when the roof collapsed during a really serious storm, landing on the plane, damaging it badly. And that being their sole flying plane, it had to be flipped south. Well, I don't know, about, what do we have, about 10 minutes left or so?
No, about five.
Okay, well, I think I'll start to wrap up. I've got several pages.
Several pages left, yes.
I just want to emphasize how much was done in Ketchikan that those of us who have probably lived in Fairbanks for a long time have really not heard of.
Yeah, no idea, whatever. Yeah, this is great.
Well, the next airline that would have been pretty big was Pacific Alaska Airways, 1934 to 1936. They were, of course, a subsidiary of Pan American Airways. And they were formed when Alaskan Airways was bought from Joe Crossan. They did a lot of flying, had a very good record, and of course, in World War II, 1941, they were just blended into Pan American, which was kind of reorienting its worldwide operations in anticipation of the war and the war in the Pacific. In those days, though, again, the aircraft now were getting good enough, they could do a lot with them. They were able to get out, do longer flights, and the scheduled airline business was finally in place. It wasn't all just charters. Well, the Ketchikan Flying Service, which lasted just 1 year in 1936, came down. They did well enough, but they had an airplane quit. And it had a pretty well-known businessman and his wife who were returning from Seattle and headed out on their honeymoon trip. Well, of course, the newspapers covered that in rather spectacular fashion, and that hurt the airline. Yep. So the owner decided to sell out. The longest airline that I can find there of people who came to Ketchikan and operated small airlines, not part of Alaska or some of the big lines, was Ellis Airlines. Was founded in July 1936 by a pretty well-known Alaska bush pilot, Robert E. Bob Ellis. And he ran from, he lived from 1903, he was born in 1903, died in 1994. He flew Wacos, mounted on Edo floats. They did well. They introduced a lot of what carried on and is probably still in place in Southeast now. Some of the routes they pioneered, of course, populations, businesses have changed. But Ellis was the big name, and I think someday I'll come back and just do an hour on Ellis. Yes, I think it would be of interest for everything that they did.
Right. I rode, I don't know if it's the same Ellis, but Ellis Airlines in Valdez, and that was in 77, 78, something like that. So the name was at least still around.
One of the things they did in 1945, they acquired two World War II surplus twin-engine Grumman Goose. And that's a great airplane for the type of flying they were doing. The number of people it could carry, its speed, its dependability. And they really, when they bought the Goose and others looked and saw what they were doing, people started buying the Goose for their aviation operations.
Yes, finally the plane meant for the environment.
And then Alaska Coastal Airlines, they lasted from 1939 to 62. And finally, in 1940. The modern, if you will, the truly modern era started with the arrival of Pan Am taking over and rebranding everything and running everything as part of Pan Am, which they, if you remember, had that 747 here every single day till they quit flying. So that pretty much shows what happened in Ketchikan. It was, it became sort of the hub, even though Juneau had more population. The hub for the home base for a lot of the airlines stayed Ketchikan. A lot done there, a lot of enjoyable firsts, and some very famous names as you explore them.
And actually, it was interesting. Ketchikan probably has better weather than Juneau, which I didn't realize, because you always think about rain when you think about Ketchikan. But
Yeah, we do.
It's a
that
good
wasn't
environment.
Quite the truth.
Nope. So I hear Tom Petty coming over the air. And that means the satellite is getting close again. It's going to take over the show, and we're going to have to call it a day. But I really thank you for bringing this out. And
thank you.
If anyone is a pilot and interested in following some of those routes, it would be, it's a great flight. But do plan ahead, because the weather is definitely something to think about. But
Absolutely.
Yeah. So stay with us, stay with us for news, and we will see you on Friday.
This is a Fox News alert. A conservative leader shot at a public event. Lisa Brady. It happened at Utah Valley University, where Charlie Kirk was holding an event this afternoon. The 31-year-old co-founder and executive director